Worth Repeating is made possible by series sponsorship from the 8020 Foundation, the City of San Antonio Department of Arts and Culture, and the Lifshutz Foundation.
Some of the stories may not be suitable for all ages. Listener discretion is advised. Welcome to the Worth Repeating podcast. I'm Tori Poole. This is the first part of the live storytelling event recorded at the Irma and Emilio Nicolas Media Center at Texas Public Radio in downtown San Antonio. The theme was serviced, stories about the jobs we do for others. Can you think of a time when you were in service for another person? The first storyteller is Vanessa Danielle Cisneros. Vanessa shares a story about the need for boundaries when considering work-life balance.
As a student, I often spent a lot of my time in the principal's office. I spoke nonstop, elementary, middle school, high school, you name it. I would like to consider myself the original yapper before it was a term. And I got the nickname in kindergarten, Vanessa La Necia, which means foolish. And my senior personality was the class clown. So I've come a long way, and I feel 6 years now being a teacher, I am getting my payback. It has been a lot of Vanessas with bright minds, but a lot of Vanessas with big mouths. It has been a journey. They say that your first year of teaching is an experience, but I feel like every year is a first for everything. The first year that you get to decorate your own classroom, the first year that you have a challenging student with an even more challenging parent during that time, the first year that you have to teach from your home, there's a lot of firsts out there. Setting boundaries was one of the first things that I had to learn, in that I was raised in a household with two teachers. Both of my parents are teachers as well. And a lot of my time was spent taken away because they'd be doing lesson plans, they'd be grading papers. That's how I got my allowance. We loved free child labor. And I told myself, if this was ever me, if I was ever in their position, it was something that I would not do. And that's a boundary that I've stuck with. But it's really hard when you have amazing students and you want to see them do amazing things. And setting those boundaries and making those parent connections, sharing my phone number was the first boundary I had to set. Given a phone number to a student and given a phone number to a parent whose student was having issues. And it was taken a little to the extreme, having dinner with my family and getting messages. Why is my child missing this? 7 p.m. And I'm just trying to have some dinner, trying to plan a vacation. So that was one of the first for me where I said, you know what? No. Doing lesson plans. There's never enough time in the day to do everything that you want. That is something that I make sure is done as soon as I try to get to work. But some of us know that sometimes it might not always get done on time. It has been a crazy 6 years of students and amazing highs and lows. Again, the first for everything, I always think of my students in that first time and place that I get to see my roster and all of these names and knowing that I'm going to be spending the next 187 days with these amazing individuals. And not some amazing individuals, but they don't need to know that. aside from teaching, we have so many other hats because teaching's not enough. We want to coach. They want us to coach. They want us to sponsor. They want us to do all of that. And that has been such a joy. I recently sponsored our coach coaching golf when the only experience I have is Top Golf. But it is so amazing, and what an opportunity, because tomorrow I get to take one of my students to the district championships. There are so many success stories, so many small victories, so many things that these students have. I always get from the non-teachers, from my non-teacher friends and family members, they're like, oh, do you ever threaten the kids and that you'll call home? These kids have so many other things to worry about, and that's life itself. So I always like to think about that. And I always think about that Vanessa from back then that was sitting in the same position that those kids were in too. I always like, aside from starting that roster as a teacher, we know sometimes we get a new student in the middle of the year. Sometimes we get a student in the middle of a testing day, and you're five court lessons in, and they're, you know, having to catch them up because you don't know where they began. You don't know where they ended. But I always think about the first impression when I get a new student and how important it is for me to make their first day, whether they're sitting in my class for 45 minutes or for 90 minutes, to have a good experience. I often think about this one student, which was this year. It was during Valentine's Day. She came in very quiet, like most of them are, but over time, you know that they're not so quiet. And Valentine's Day was coming up. And of course, although it wasn't in the curriculum, I said we could watch a movie and that they could bring their snacks. And she overheard me tell another student what my favorite snack was, because we were talking about snacks. And on Valentine's Day, that student who had only been sitting in my class for 2 weeks, who did not speak, who I see in the hallways, say hi to her, hey, Alexa, how's it going? She was the only student that brought me a Valentine's Day gift that day because of a conversation that she overheard with another student. And again, it's those small victories, small connections that we make. There are times when there are not so great connections, when you struggle with that one student, when you are not sure what's wrong. I always thought when I started teaching that seeing kids with their heads down, oh, I'm too boring, oh, they're not engaged. But over time, you understand, once you get to know your students, no, it's because they didn't get any sleep, because they were having to look over their younger sibling all night and they didn't get any sleep the night prior. You learn that they have so many other worries. You would think that the only job they have is to be a student, but they have so much more than that. So I try to be mindful in that, and knowing, hey, it's not because I'm boring, or maybe I am. I teach RLA, who knows? Maybe it's that's going on. But from elementary to middle school, I have been able to enjoy what I do. Dimming the light is something that one of my first teacher friends told me, you know, don't let them dim your light. There were times when I would be very discouraged, very insecure about what I was teaching, what I was doing at times. But it has been a tremendous 6 years of doing that. I share these stories with you so you can understand from a teacher perspective as well. It is something that I share with my friends. It is something that I share with my family. And again, I hope you all enjoyed me speaking briefly on this. Thank you.
It's probably a good practice not to share our personal cell phone with students. Worth Repeating returns this fall, and I want to hear from you. Take some time and tell us what you thought of this past season. Suggest some themes for next year, or maybe just give us our flowers. Visit tpr.org/WR and fill out the survey today. Not a survey guy or gal? You can shoot me an email directly at worthrepeating@tpr.org.
This program was made possible with support from the 80/20 Foundation, striving to transform San Antonio by issuing grants to public charities that attract, grow, and retain San Antonio's future workforce. For this and more information, visit 8020foundation.com.
Our next storyteller is Rose Rivers. Rose shares a story about her louder-than-life journey in a very quiet place.
When I was a child, I had this book, and it was called School Days. I remember for each grade, I would write down my interests, my hobbies, new friends I made, my insecurities. I'm just kidding. Maybe I did write that. But I remember the last question it always asked, what do you want to be when you grow up? Like my occupation. So I would always write the same thing, artist. And I would spell it A-R-T-E-S-T. I wasn't the greatest speller. I loved to read, but I didn't read well. But that was okay. I never gave up. I had all the goosebumps, right? I had all that. I loved it. I never dreamt. Well, I'm honored to be here in front of you to tell you the story of how I became a librarian. Forgot to mention that. I never dreamt my dream job was going to be a librarian because I didn't think I could be a librarian. I never saw librarians that looked like me. I didn't even think it was an option. And so when I was 19, I remember I got hired as a library aide, AKA I shelved books, right? And I was so excited. I was 19 and it was my last year of being a teenager. And so I was straight edge all through high school. If anybody, if you know, are familiar, I didn't drink, I didn't do drugs, and I wasn't promiscuous, AKA I wasn't a slut. And so it started quickly where I had a hot beer at the old silos where Blue Star is. If you know, it's desert and an old couch, and you would party there. That was my first drink, and I got hooked. I was introduced to my favorite movie and probably one of the reasons why I became a librarian, starring Parker Posey. It's called Party Girl film. If you haven't seen it, I challenge you to watch it because this week is National Library Week. So, okay, back to the, I got some time. Okay, so I would like a falafel with hot sauce, a side of baba ganoush, and a seltzer, please. That's from Party Girl. And so I was like Mary, the main character. She drank. She loved to have fun. She was a flirt. She lied. And I felt like I could relate. And I was like, I'm a party girl, too. Slowly, my values changed. And so what my focus was getting high and you know, blacking out. This is not supposed to be a comedy show. And so, okay, back to the story. I lost my job at the San Antonio Public Library because of, my addictions, my fears. And so when I was let go, I had the greatest idea to seek revenge. I was going to go back to school and get my master's in library science, and they were going to be forced to hire me back. That was the plan. I was never hired back. But in 2016, I made my way into the academic field, became an academic librarian with no experience, but a lot of fear. I didn't think I could do the job well. And there were a lot of misconceptions of what librarians look like. And I didn't have the stereotypical librarian look. And so when students would ask, can I speak to a librarian? It started to feel a certain way, like I really wasn't good enough. I couldn't do this job. So what I did was I reached out to mentors to help me so I can get better in the speech department. I talked to faculty there. I would observe seasonal librarians because I wanted to do the job well for my students. Recently, I took a little break from work too because burnout is real. And I heard there were lots of students asking about me. And thank you. I had no idea. I had a student come in and he said, they told me to come back in a month. So I did, and you still weren't here. So he came back 3 times. And because of that, I know that I am being of service in my job is to connect. And that's, for me, that's the deepest thing, is connecting with another human on, you know, I'm not on a pedestal. And I make sure that they do know that. But I enjoy my job. And like I said, I challenge you to watch Party Girl for National Library Week.
If you take anything away from this story, it's don't sleep on the cult classic Party Girl.
This program was made possible by the City of San Antonio Department of Arts and Culture, striving to enrich the quality of life of San Antonio residents and visitors by creating art programming and helping people experience art. For this and more information, visit getcreativesanantonio.com.
Our next story is Sandra Velarde. Sandra shares a story about a job she needed and how it shaped a period of her life she'll never forget.
There I stood, staring at this bouffant hairdo straight out of the 50s, sitting atop this 90-year-old, wrinkled up, puckered up face, with heavily penciled eyebrows and way too much blush. As this woman looked over and noticed my daughters sitting a few booths from her, and she uttered these 5 words to me. Bless their poor little hearts. Those words sat heavy on my chest, because I knew I was a statistic. It was 1992. I was 22 years old. I had just left a marriage of 5 years, an abusive marriage of 5 years. Now, my decision to leave the marriage did not sit well with many in my family. They're all great people, mind you. It's just that the small border town where I'm from is so heavily steeped in its traditional and cultural mores. Nonetheless, there I was. I had just landed my first official job as a full-fledged adult, and I was now a waitress at the Henny Penny restaurant. I think that restaurant appealed to me because of its building. So I'll backtrack a little and say this restaurant was a tiny diner in this tiny rural town, border town where I'm from. This town had one traffic light, one grocery store, one Texaco gas station, but it did have 2 restaurants to choose from. And I chose the nicer restaurant on the nicer side of the railroad tracks. So I think this appealed to me because of its building and just the aesthetic. It had a whitewashed cinder block exterior with a dark red A-frame roof, and it stood in such stark contrast to the drab gray and beige that were outside of the desert and the highway that I'd grown up around. It felt like a fresh, clean start for me. And I was really, really excited about this new chapter of my life. But I was also really naive. Unfortunately, in a small town, you can also kind of be sheltered from the world. And I learned really quickly that the outside world could be just as harsh as the world inside your home. I learned this right upon arriving. My first day on the job, I was almost giddy about this joining this all-female team of waitresses at the Henny Penny. They're called servers now, but back then we were called waitresses. This was a long time ago. I expected solidarity, maybe even friendship, but there was none. I learned that my coworkers were rough. They were mean and conniving, and they sabotaged my work at every turn. They did this at the outset by getting dibs on all their favorite tables and assigning to me all the undesirable tables, which is how I ended up with a rude bouffant. Another challenging table, or customer, I should say, was part of the after church crowd. She'd come in with her family, and she was nicely dressed with well-coiffed hair, wearing fashionable eyeglasses, and just the right amount of makeup on her face. She looked really nice, but she complained about everything, from the amount of lettuce in her hamburger to the amount of cheese on her salad. One day, she made me bring her iced tea 4 times. The first time, way too much ice. The second time, not enough ice. The third time, still not enough ice. And the fourth time, finally, with a heavy and audible sigh, she finally accepted it. With every glass of iced tea, she berated me like a child in the middle of the diner. Every day that I was there, I encountered this pettiness and this negativity from many of my customers. It's like they were taking out their life frustrations on us. I thought, wait, I'm juggling working 15 hours at the community college 45 miles away, single motherhood now, a difficult estranged husband, and his difficult children. And you're complaining about iced tea? Come on. It was depleting. Every day I felt my hope, my happiness, my confidence being eroded and blown away, much like the sand dunes that were outside for miles and miles and miles. As I look back on my time there at the Henny Penny, by the way, my coworkers finally succeeded in getting me fired. Those conniving bitches. I thought about calling them out tonight by name, but it wouldn't matter because I'm certain none of them know what TPR is. I'm pretty sure they are still back there, still waiting tables. And here I am, standing before you all, doing my storytelling debut. But looking back at my time there, I learned to do hard things at the Henny Penny. So when life issued its challenges, and it has, and it does, I tackle them head on. I choose to focus on the positive of that experience. I tackle shit, and I know I can overcome. So thank you, Henny Penny, for helping to make me who I am today. For helping to get me where I am today. And thank all of you for being here tonight and buying a ticket and listening to my story. Good night.
Sandra reminds us that we never know the person behind the job, and so it's important to always be kind. Worth Repeating relies on supporters like you. Supporting your favorite programs is important now more than ever. I ask you every show, and now I'm asking you every podcast. If Worth Repeating is a program that you turn to with fidelity, consider becoming a new or increasing your sustaining membership. You can do so by visiting tpr.org and clicking the red donate button today. You can leave a personalized note and tell them Tori said, meow, 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 meow.
This program is made possible by the Lifshutz Foundation, an arts, culture, and humanities fundraising organization.
Our next storyteller is Michelle Byrne. Michelle shares a story about a summer job that gave her maybe a little too much confidence.
So I'm walking through the student union and I see this sign that says Dude Ranch summer jobs. And I think that sounds amazing. So it's my end of my first year of college and I am miserable. It's 1980s. So it's the greed is good 80s. It's material girls 80s. And I am majoring in creative writing and linguistics. And everybody is asking me, what are you going to do with that? And how are you going to make any money? And everybody else has a plan for a job title and a dollar figure, and I do not. And so I don't fit in, and I'm very alone, and I haven't made any friends. So a job at a dude ranch in Colorado far away sounds like a great idea. It also sounds better than the job that I currently had, which was at the one-hour Moto Photo, processing other people's vacation pictures. So, and maybe there would be people there who were kind of like me, who just wanted to try something new and do something different. So I apply for a job as a cabin maid and I get it. And it's very different work than the Moto Photo. So I have to get up early and have breakfast at 6 before the guests come down at 7 o'clock. And while they're coming down, I have to hike up the mountain with my bucket full of cleaning supplies like Pine Sol and Mr. Clean and my broom and mop in the other hand. And I get to cleaning and it's, you know, making beds and cleaning the bathrooms and throwing away empty beer cans and empty gin bottles. And then I have to hike all that back down and then hike up to the next cabin. And after about 4 or 5 of those, I'm done. And I love it. I love the work because it's physical and I'm outside sometimes. And I also love my coworkers. We've become great friends and we're having a good time. So after when I've got the afternoons free and Patty, who's one of the wranglers, she'll let me know if there's a horse available and I can join up for the trail ride, or I'll wait for Britta to get off lunch and we'll go for a hike. And then after dinner, a lot of us would get together and we'd go to our favorite spot and start a campfire and we'd play Steve Miller all night long. And we'd have this dome of stars above us. And I would look up and I would think, this is so much better than Moto Photo. And so I decide I'm going to celebrate this freedom and this joy that I have. On 4th of July, I'm going to go hike Monkey Face. Monkey Face was a big mountain about 1.5 miles away. And it had a boulder on the front that looked like a gorilla face. And so I put a canteen in my backpack and a camera, which is 2 things I took everywhere that summer. And I head out immediately breaking the 2 rules of hiking. I didn't invite anybody to go with me. And I didn't tell anybody where I was going. I just started walking. So, you know, I follow the road, the trail, I see the trail markers, I see the trailhead, I start going up. The beginning of the trail is nice and easy, it's wide, well-traveled. It's a pretty steep ascent, so automatically I'm seeing the valley getting deeper quickly, and I can see the Canaos River snaking through. And I'm so entranced by this beauty that I'm not paying attention to how treacherous the trail is becoming. So, you know, I come across a big rock and I have to climb over the rock, but I can see the trail on the other side, so I catch it. And every time this happens, the rocks are getting bigger and bigger, right? And then I come across one and I'm kind of going across it, right, like this, and I'm looking for where it ends in the trail on the other side, and I'm not finding it. And then I realize that I am stranded, stuck, cheek to cheek with Monkey Face. And I'm panicking, right? Like, I don't know how to get out of this. I can't move up. I can't move down. So I think, okay, just listen for voices to help. And all I can hear is my heart beating and the sound of my breath against the rock. And I think, shit, I have to just get it together. I just have to find my way down. So I just very slowly start moving. One, and then another. If you saw me from a distance, you wouldn't know that I was moving. It's so slow and gradual, but I'm making my way down, until my foot hits the big flat boulder. And I realize I'm safe. I drop to my butt. I'm just grateful to be down. And I scooch to the edge of the boulder. I'm not ready to stand up yet. And I see the trail. Okay, I'm safe. So I make my way back to the trail and I make my way back to the road. And I find my way, I'm walking back to the dude ranch, and I hear a car coming. And I look behind, and it's Gage and Kelly in Gage's Jeep. And they pull over, we're all going back to the lodge. You want to ride? Sure. So I hop in the back, and I want to tell them what just happened, but I don't have the words. I don't know how to process this. I'm thinking that was really stupid and dangerous, but I'm feeling like that was amazing. Like, that was awesome. I don't know what I just did, but I did it, right? And so, and here I am now in this car with Gage and Kelly, and we're riding back to this job at a dude ranch, and just, I'm feeling great, and this summer has been great, and I've got about 5 weeks left in the job, and when I get back to school, one of the first things I do is I take all of my film to the 1 hour moto photo, and I get it developed, and I have these pictures hanging above my desk in my apartment that year to remind me that I'm not alone and that it's okay to not have a plan. I can figure it out one step at a time.
It sounds like that summer shaped her in more ways than one. That's it for the Worth Repeating podcast. Do us a favor and give us a like, subscribe, or review us wherever you stream podcasts. Stay tuned for part two on the theme Serviced, streaming everywhere you stream podcasts, coming soon. Worth Repeating is made possible by the 8020 Foundation, the City of San Antonio Department of Arts and Culture, and the Lifshutz Foundation. Worth Repeating is a production of Texas Public Radio. I'm Tori Poole. Thanks for listening.